just work on coping strategies, learning how to cope in a mature way and not blow up your life or not self-sabotage, and learning how to actually feel uncomfortable and know that like you're not going to die as a result of feeling overwhelmed for 20 minutes is huge. That's changed everything for me. And that's the reason that I don't drink or, you know, eat 1,000 pounds of Nutella a week or a bunch of pizza, is because I know sometimes life is uncomfortable, but it's not going to be that way forever. And I allow myself to get to the other side. But when we do things to try to make it go away, we never move to the other side of it because we never go through it. So I'd say work on your coping skills with.
Hello, my fellow humans, and welcome back to another episode of the Healthy, Happy Human Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Levitin, and every week I bring you discussions on topics to help you build a healthy mind, a happy body, and hopefully become an all-around better human. Because a rising tide raises all ships, and better humans make a better humanity. Remember, we're all in this together. If you want to keep on this journey with me, you can subscribe to the Healthy, Happy newsletter, a weekly Friday email where I send out tips and tidbits of the things that I've been learning about, and powerful quotes and just general helpful resources that I think will help you on your journey. It's completely free, and the link to register is in the show notes. If while you're listening today, you're enjoying what you hear, take a second and snap a quick screenshot and upload it to Instagram and tag me at Paul Levitin so I can share in your enthusiasm and repost it to my audience. It really makes my day to see these. And if you get value from today's show, don't forget to share this episode with a friend or family member so that they can get some value along with you. And with that, it's time to start today's episode. Let's go and let's grow. What an amazing talk I have lined up for you today. My guest, Jill Teets, is the host of the Sober Powered podcast and is a biochemist hailing out of the Boston area. When Jill quit drinking in 2019, she dedicated herself to learning about alcohol's influence on the brain and how it can cause addiction. Today, she educates and empowers others to assess their relationship with alcohol. This was a super interesting and topical conversation to me because, as some longtime listeners know, I have had my own, shall we say, experiences with alcohol. And while I'm not sober in the sense that I never drink, I am about 95% of the way there, only having alcohol once every maybe couple months or a handful of times a year. The point, though, is that a key factor in me turning my life around from being blackout drunk, drug doing, belligerent, bad decision making, just all around asshat, to creating and becoming the happy, healthy human was me putting away alcohol and getting away from drinking so much. And this episode is not meant to tell anyone what to do, nor do I nor Jill seek to judge or anything like that. If you like to drink and have no plans on stopping, this episode is still going to be hugely impactful for you. And that is because of Jill's unique perspective as a scientist and how she understands the human body and the human brain and her insights around building and breaking habits, regardless of if those habits have anything to do with alcohol or not. All right, with that being said, here's my conversation with Jill Teets. All right, Jill, my first question for you is, what does it mean to you to be sober powered?
I love that question. Thank you for asking me that. So I think what sober powered is all about is that now that I'm sober, like I can literally do anything. And maybe that sounds cheesy or like, yeah, you know, whatever, we've heard that kind of thing. But I spent my whole life just suffering and like trying to make everything better, but then nothing would change and beating myself up. And then all of a sudden I removed this one thing from my life and I was able to do all the things I wanted to do. I was able to put effort in and have it actually pay off. And I trust myself and I believe in myself now. So I think that's what it's about.
That's amazing. That's super powerful. And I like that you said, you know, trusting yourself and believing in yourself. Something I talk about a lot on this show and in my coaching and everything that I do is that to me, happiness and a successful life and a purposeful life boils down to a few key things. And one of those things is being able to keep promises to yourself and being the type of person who does what they say that they're going to do. And coming from someone who myself has had my own tangles with alcohol and
certainly alcohol abuse for many years, I know that that is not something that I was doing when I was drinking a lot. I was not keeping a lot of promises, let alone to myself. So I'm curious, like, what are some changes that you saw in yourself when you first maybe decided to become sober?
That was a big one, was keeping my promises to myself. Like before, I would make a promise every day, either I'm not going to drink or I'm going to drink this amount. And every day consistently, I would break the promise. So then the next day I would beat myself up for it. And it got to a point where anytime I would try to make a promise on any topic, I couldn't even get through the thought in my head where I started like interrupting myself and saying like, yeah, right, you're not going to do that. Like, come on. So I just had no faith in myself. I didn't believe in myself in any way. And that was one of the first things that came back, was I trusted myself because I kept this promise to myself every day that I was not going to drink.
Yeah, I can't overstate how powerful that is, of just keeping promises to yourself. Because, you know, I have an episode that I did a while back called How to Be Happy. And, you know, I break down what I consider to be the three C's of happiness. And one of them is self-confidence. And to me, self-confidence is simply that. It's being the person who does what they say they're going to do and keeping promises to yourself, because how can you be confident outwardly towards others if you can't even keep promises to yourself? Inherent in that, it's like, I want to present confidently, right? We all do. That's a huge goal that every person has, is to be a confident person. But there's a paradox there where it's like, if I'm not being true to myself and honest with myself, my brain knows that, at least even at a subconscious level, that's always going to come squeaking out, where I'm like, I'm never going to be able to be confident. So, you know, my question is, you've studied biology and understand how this stuff kind of works at a deeper level. So actually, before I get into that, why don't you let people know a little bit about your educational background, and then also how you came to be the sober powered one?
Yes. So I have a master's in biology, which I got while I was drinking every day. So it feels like an extra achievement. I even graduated early. Look at me, high achiever. So I was drinking every day during that time. And then after I graduated, you know, I started my career in biotech, and things just kept escalating and getting worse. And I kept justifying, I have a master's degree, I have this job as a scientist, I'm married, I have a place to live, like there's nothing wrong in my life, so alcohol can't be a problem for me. And it kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And then I finally like couldn't hide from it anymore, and I had to address it. But when I quit, I just needed to understand, like, is something wrong with me? Is it my fault? Am I actually like a weak-willed loser, like the stigma tells us? And that's why I started learning about it, because I just wanted that answer. And that motivates every single thing that I do and everything that I talk about, is I want to understand that for myself, like why me and why not other people? And I want anyone who listens to me to understand, like, you are not a loser. That's my whole point.
That's awesome. I don't think anyone's a loser. So I think that that's a great mission to have. And just, you know, on a personal note, I had a very similar, what I call them, origin story. You know, I went to college for business administration and marketing, but I mean, I went through all 4 years of college, actually 5 years of college, just in a perpetual state of blackout. I actually stayed an extra year in college because I was having so much fun drinking. I could have graduated on time, but I decided to stay an extra year. I took two classes my super senior year and went out five nights a week. So I was literally taking two like 100 level classes just so I didn't have to graduate, so that I could party five times a week. And that was like my life. And I was the party guy. Like that was who I was. It was my identity. And, you know, there was a big, you know, part of like me figuring out how to get away from that was only now looking back, I understand, was that I had to change that identity, right? I could no longer be Paul, the party guy, Paul, the blackout drunk, Paul, the guy who's going to go and rip 18 shots at the bar and make sure that he's the drunkest one there, because that's what's funny. And like, that's what gave me value and validation. So I'm curious, like, what did you find you needed to change about yourself to be able to start to keep the promises to yourself?
Well, I believed for so long that I was different from everyone else and that I, not that I don't do anything wrong, but that I very rarely do anything wrong. A lot of other people do stuff that impacts my life. And it took a lot of work to realize that I also have responsibility over my own life and for the things that happen. And even if people do things that hurt me or harm me, I have some role in that. I think taking ownership.
Huge. I'm huge on ownership. That's a big one. And I talk about this a lot too. It's like, it's all your fault, you know? And I say this with love and care in my heart. When I tell people this, I'm like, wherever you are in life right now, it's your fault. And even if it isn't your fault, it's your responsibility, right? Because we always want to push this off of us. Well, it's, you don't understand, Paul, and my dad did this, but then the economy was that. And it's like, I get that. And I empathize and it's real. And yet here we are. And what do we do about it? And even, it's even bigger when it isn't your fault, right? Because there are times where it's just like, yep, I got the shit under the stick and I had a dad that was abusive or a mom that didn't love me or whatever the thing was, right? And there's all this stuff that's real. So, you know, I think that that's super powerful, but I want to kind of loop this back around because, you know, my listeners know everyone, this is all about just general health and happiness and just living a better life. So I'm curious, as someone who's, you know, studied humans in some capacity, do you see people's struggles with alcohol as being fundamentally different than the way people struggle with other habits, things like maybe eating or exercising or whatever the type of stuff that people go through on a day-to-day basis?
It's all really, really similar. And transfer addiction is real. So someone can struggle with alcohol and then they get sober and then now they binge on sugar every day. I actually started with food first and then I discovered alcohol later and it just did it better for me than food did. So I was like, I don't need this problem anymore. Hello, alcohol. But yeah, it's all very similar. And it's all just a way of getting instant gratification, fixing our problems, escaping from our problems. And it doesn't matter what does it for you more. I think the same intention is behind it.
I appreciate that because, again, something I like to emphasize on this show and just in general is that everything is the same. Addiction is addiction is addiction, and struggle is struggle and struggle, and change is change is change, and change is hard. And that's what we're talking about here at the root of everything is change, because there's a reason that people go to whatever their vice is, whether it's alcohol, whether it's sugar, whether it's sex, whether it's porn. It doesn't matter. The thing is, it's a release. It is that instant gratification. It takes your mind off of something else in that moment. It gives you something right now. It gives you an immediate sense of, oh, okay, all right, things aren't so bad, even if just for a moment. And again, even if that's subconsciously, even if you don't realize that's what's happening, that, you know, more than often tends to be the case. So when you look at something like that, like you were, right? Like you said, you got a 4-year degree in less than 4 years, and you were a successful scientist. Or I was, you know, I graduated with honors, you know, and with 2 degrees. And although I don't remember doing it, is that okay? Like, if I'm a quote unquote functioning alcoholic, what is the drawback with that?
Yeah, it's harder for the people that are functioning. And I've read some studies where actually the authors were surprised by the level of denial that they see in the successful, well-educated people, is the way that they put it. They thought that maybe their success and high levels of education would kind of give them an advantage in recognizing that they had something going on, but they had the strongest level of denial of anyone they looked at. So I think the more good things that you have in your life, the longer you can justify what you're doing isn't that bad. And, you know, the consequences build up, but they can be offset by all your amazing accomplishments and how, you know, everybody thinks you're fun when you're drinking or going out to eat or, you know, whatever the thing is. And yeah, it's much harder for people that are successful and educated.
That's such a good point. And again, this is not just with alcohol, right? This is with anything that we quote unquote need to change, right? This is the person who's very overweight to the point that it's becoming a detriment to their life, but they can compartmentalize that and go, well, it's not that bad because I'm still going to work. I'm still doing this. I'm still doing that. Or again, it's the person who is neglecting any area of their life. It becomes easy to look at these other things and we put blinders on and kind of like push that to the side. But I think that is like one of these human nature things, because your brain, you know, this is cognitive dissonance, right? Your brain doesn't want you to be destroying yourself. So if you are choosing to destroy yourself in some way, which we are choosing, right? We said that this is your fault or it's your responsibility. You are in some way doing this to yourself. We are doing this myself. I was doing it to myself. I am part of this. I was this, I am this still. I struggle with this still. I have to be able to justify that to myself in some way. Most people are not just like, yeah, I'm drinking myself to death. Smile. Like people are like, yeah, like I'm drinking and it's okay, you know, because like it's not a big deal because it's only on Fridays and like, you know, I like whatever, I'm fine by Sunday afternoon, you know, or something like that. So the thing is, like, with the way human nature is, it kind of jumps through these hoops for us and allows us to trick ourselves. So how do I get around that? Or how can I, if I feel like, well, maybe this is something that like I could deal with, but I also don't feel like it's that bad of a problem. Like, how do I know? There has to be a level of social drinking is okay. Alcohol has been around as much as part of human history as history is, right? So there has to be some level that's okay. How do I know when to draw that line?
Good question. So if you are wondering deep down whether you have a problem with anything, it's because you know the truth that you do. I started questioning my drinking 2 years into drinking, and I didn't quit for another 5 years. And back then, I had a problem back then when I started questioning it, and it got worse and worse and worse. And I justified it and, you know, rationalized why it wasn't that bad. And eventually I had to face it. But if you're wondering, it's because you know.
Yeah. That's hard truth, hard pill to swallow, but I do agree. So again, I'm going to ask these questions framed around alcohol, but again, for anyone listening, you can, I believe you can take out alcohol and put in, again, whatever your thing is, whatever your vice is, whether it's lack of exercise, whether it's eating too much, whether it's, again, just being a shitty person in general, you know, all of this stuff is kind of the same. But when it comes to, I have this quote unquote problem, I've been using something to numb myself, whether it's food, whether it's alcohol, whether it's whatever. If I take that away, what is left? Because I feel like a lot of people do this thing where they do that step. They're like, okay, I'm going to stop binge eating. I'm going to stop drinking, but they don't fill that void with something else. And to me, I've seen, in my experience, at least, that to me is a big reason why people fail. So do I need to replace it with something? Like, is it like a swap that I have to do? How does that work?
Yeah. So you can't swap it, because the things that we're doing that are destructive are instant gratification. Like when I have a glass of wine, everything is amazing. I feel amazing. My husband's better. My house is less dirty. My day didn't suck as much. Like, I'm happier. I hate myself less. Like, any problem that I have is better instantly. Even not even when I have the drink. When I decide I'm going to have the drink, that's when everything gets better. Nothing good is going to do that. And that's where a lot of us get stuck. And we're trying to search for this quick fix. And that's why it's so common for people to go from alcohol to food, or from food to alcohol, because those are both really easy to obtain. And because we're looking for something to do the same kind of fix, instant gratification fix. I'm in a little loop where I kind of eat a lot of sugar right now. I don't feel guilty about it. So, you know, whatever. But I was talking to my therapist about it. And I was like, yeah, I guess I just got to stop, you know, and then move on and not do it anymore. I guess that's what I have to do. And she's like, well, what else are you going to do? Because we think we're just going to pluck this thing out of our life and then everything else stays the same. But I can do other positive things that don't, maybe they don't give me the same vibe. Like having a milkshake is 1,000 times better than taking a bath. That sounds horrible. But which one's going to help tomorrow's Jill? The bath. And eventually you learn that these things are good for you and they fill up your time, the time that you'd be using, you know, to hate yourself from drinking too much or plan the drinking or, you know, plan the food or be like, ooh, I said I wasn't going to have sugar today, but like I really wanted. And so it takes up that time. So I think kind of replace it, but also recognize that you're not going to get an instant fix.
Yeah. And that's the hard part, right? So I, again, listeners will know that I have a recent gripe with the phrase easier said than done.
Yeah.
Everything that you're saying is easier said than done. Everything that we're talking about is easier said than done. And that's why I have a gripe with it now, because I find myself saying it every single day in every situation. And I've come to realize that everything is easier said than done because it's easier to talk than it is to do. Right. So like, I just want to throw that phrase out because it's like, we get it. It's yes, it's easier said than done. Yes, I get it. But like now, again, now where do we go from there? And the thing is, what you were just saying, where you have to, your brain wants instant gratification. But inherently, the things that are going to give us instant gratification are usually bad or worse than the things that would give us delayed gratification, right? So that's kind of like, you know, the marshmallow test. The people who can delay gratification tend to be more successful, more happy, more everything. But that's the hard thing, delaying gratification. So I'm wondering, do you have any tools that you use personally in that moment to remind yourself or to like when you have that thing of like, oh, a glass of wine would be so good right now. How do you remind yourself that, but future Jill will be happy if I just do a workout or take a bath?
Yeah. So I've had times where I've been like super triggered because something unexpected and horrible has happened. And my first thought is like, walk to the liquor store, buy a bunch of the little airplane bottles, go in your car. Like I have like a whole scenario that plays out.
It's not go take a bath. That's not where your head goes.
No. And then what I say to myself is I can't do that, or we don't do that anymore. Either one of those is the next thought that I have. And then I'm like, okay, now what? So then my next thought is like, it's either never eat again for the rest of your life, or it's like, go binge on sugar. It's like two extremes. And then I'm like, okay, well, we're not going to do that. So what else can we do? And I keep going through the self-destructive things and seeing them for what they are and just saying like, no, that's not the solution. And then I go to the stupid stuff. I go to the bath, take a walk, call a friend, go to the gym, like journal, like all the stuff that just makes us roll our eyes. And anytime someone recommended journaling to me when I was drinking, oh my God, they didn't understand me at all. But I understand it's dumb. No one wants to do that stuff. Nobody, except maybe a couple weirdos. But I go through the list of the stupid stuff until one doesn't sound totally dumb. And then I do that thing. So I think I acknowledge things for what they are. I see the self-destructive stuff for what it is. Like drinking or eating, is that going to fix my problem? Probably not. No. Is a walk? Also no, but it'll let me calm down. And then I can fix the problem after I'm calm. But I can't fix the problem when I'm drunk.
I love that. I'm like literally cracking up because those are all things that I like teach people to do. I'm like, oh, just go take a walk or like, just, you know, just journal about it. But you're right though. No one wants to do that. If I had an option between solving my problem with a milkshake or with a journal, you know, I know which one is going to do, but then I know which is actually going to solve my problem and which is actually going to cause more problems for tomorrow me. And there's a lot that you said in that last little bit that I actually want to unpack, because the first thing is I use that as a compass, right? And it's very easy. It's so binary. It's crazy. The thing that you will feel good about tomorrow is the thing that you're supposed to do. And the thing that you're not supposed to do is the thing that's going to make you feel bad tomorrow. And almost 100% of the times those things flip right now. So right now, the thing that's going to make you feel bad tomorrow makes you feel good today. Drinking the alcohol, eating the McDonald's Big Mac with the large fries, with the 20 piece nuggets, with the large Coke, because that's like my thing, right? But I know that as soon as I do that, the moment I'm done, my stomach hurts, I feel bloated, I feel disgusted with myself. I'm literally in physical pain because I've put more food in my stomach than it can actually fit. But in that moment, my ape brain, my monkey brain, my insect brain, my lizard brain, whatever you want to call it. I know none of those things are real, but that little part of your brain that's just saying, yeah, give me that instant hit is sitting there. And that's what we're fighting against. And that's why I like having conversations like these. And I think that's why this stuff is so important to me, because there is no quick fix answer. As you just said, you had to go through this whole list of like, I'm going to go buy a whole bottle and down it. Okay. Talk myself off that ledge. But then all I got to was like, okay, I'm just going to go eat an entire candy store worth of sugar. Oh, crap. Hold on. Can't do that. And like, it was a long drawn out process that got me to, I guess I'll go for a walk, even though it's the 18th thing on the list of things that what I would like to do right now. But when you at least balance that with what I want to be doing with but the person that I want to be. And you said that the phrase that I wrote down here is that we don't do that. And I think that's so powerful, because if you've read Atomic Habits by James Clear, or read any Seth Godin stuff, they talk about this, but one of James Clear's big things is the way you build habits is through identity. People like us do things like this. And they use, cigarette smokers as an example, where it's like people who identified as a smoker, right? I'm a smoker, find it harder to quit cigarettes. Where if you say, I am someone who smokes cigarettes, find it much easier because I am a smoker. That's part of my identity. And I'm a drinker. Again, I was Paul, the blackout drunk. I was the party guy. That was my identity. And while I held on to that piece of my identity, even I might be able to put it off to the side for a little while, but it always came creeping back because somewhere, either consciously or subconsciously, that was a part of who I was. So I think that little bit that you said, you're like, when you're having that inner monologue, you're like, we don't do this. I don't do this. This is not who I am anymore. That to me is that big thing that will allow you to be like, ugh. The walk will do. So I'm wondering when you're doing stuff like that, like, is that like a conscious decision? Is that something that you've thought about in the past, or is that how your brain works when you're saying we, is it more of Jill talking to Jill, or is it we like an identity thing?
I never thought about it. I think it's Jill to Jill, if I have to just answer. But no, I was very reactive, and that's another positive change in sobriety. I've learned to be proactive and to pause and think first. But before, something bad would happen, and then I would go blow up my life with alcohol because I thought it helped, because I felt so overwhelmed. I couldn't even like handle another moment feeling that way. And that's why I needed the instant gratification fix. Alcohol or food or, you know, self-harm or sex, all these things, they bring that feeling down immediately. And now I recognize that, yeah, they bring it down immediately, but then they trap you in a cycle where as soon as that thing is done, the alcohol wears off, the food is gone, whatever, now you're overwhelmed again and you have to do it again and again and again. And if you can just get through the beginning of the overwhelm by doing stupid stuff like walking or taking a bath or calling a friend or, you know, journaling, all of that stuff, if you can just get through the overwhelm, it'll go away and then you'll be able to handle it. And the next day you wake up, you feel a little bit better instead of 1,000 times worse. So I think recognizing that was the actual truth helped me a lot. And I think making drinking a non-negotiable too.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you're hitting on a lot of my points right here that I love. And again, this is why I like this type of stuff, because everything that you just said is not just about alcohol, right? This is just about human stuff and being proactive versus being reactive. Again, when I talk about what are my keys to being happy and my keys to a successful life, that is it right there. If I had to boil my whole thesis of life down to one statement, how do I live a good life? It's by being proactive rather than being reactive. a reactive life is a life of agony to me. I'm being pushed around. I'm putting out fires. I'm responding to things. I'm reacting to things. A proactive life, I'm in the driver's seat. I'm making decisions for myself. I'm choosing to do what I want to do. Even with drinking, there's drinking where I'm doing it proactively and I'm having a drink and I'm having it responsibly and I'm enjoying it. And then there's drinking where, like as you said, I'm having a 5% enjoyment and 100% pain the next day because I just went off the rails and I'm just doing all of this crazy stuff. And pausing as well is a part of that, right? To be able to, you know, it's the famous saying, you know, between stimulus and response, there's a space, and that space is everything. So do you do something like some people, again, count to 10 or do like something where it's like, when you have that feeling of like, I want to do this. And I know that this thing is going to hurt me tomorrow, but I don't care because it's not tomorrow, it's today. And I want this right now. Is there a thing that you do to help yourself pause and get yourself back into that proactive state?
Really, really loud metal music. That's what I do.
I love that. I love that because I can see you right now and we've met before in person and like, I kind of get a idea of your vibe, but I feel like from your voice, you don't sound like the person. So anyone listening is probably like, what? Like, okay. Okay. I guess. All right. So, I love this talk and I appreciate that, but I want to ask a little bit more, since I have you here, you are an expert on this type of stuff. I would be remiss if I didn't ask some more sciencey questions. So, you know, first thing I just want to know is there anything that as you were diving into this stuff and learning about alcohol, its effects on the body, its effects on the brain, maybe specifically, any like statistics or facts that really jumped out at you and surprised you?
I think the most helpful thing that I've ever learned is that we don't all have the same experience when we drink, like in our head. And what I mean by that is when I have a drink, alcohol feels like the most amazing thing that has ever existed. There's no better feeling than having that like first sip of wine. It feels so pleasurable for me. Like I took 90 days off, you know, to cure myself or whatever. And then I drank again. I wasn't cured, but you know, I thought I would be, but I drank again. And on the first sip of wine, I was like almost in tears. It was so amazing for me. And what I learned is not everybody feels that way. And when I learned that, I was like, whoa, like that's why people leave half a drink behind and they don't finish every like last drop and all of their friends' drinks too. Like it doesn't feel like the most amazing thing for everybody on the planet. We all experience it differently. And for people that think it's just meh, they're not going to want to drink every single day like I did, or like it's not going to become this super important thing. So I think that was one of the most impactful things for me.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And just listening to you say that, because that's not my experience with alcohol at all. I don't like alcohol. But again, what I liked and still do like from time to time, because I'm not 100% sober. I'm like 99% sober. But what I liked was, again, being the center of attention, was being the guy who was able to cut loose and joke a little, was be able to talk to girls because I needed a few drinks in me to be able to start approaching girls at the bar and stuff like that. So it wasn't the taste of alcohol or the feeling. It was what did that allow me to do? But again, it was just interesting hearing you talk about that because there was still a direct connection to enjoyment in some way or something that I was seeking to get out of it. So it wasn't the same thing that you were getting out of it, but we're both seeking something. And, you know, that kind of just made me think like the way you experience alcohol like that, genuinely enjoying alcohol, what does that say about addiction? Is it that some people have addictive personalities or are we addicted to the thing? Do you get what I'm saying? Like, is it that I'm addicted to alcohol or I have a person with addictive tendencies and alcohol just happened to be what fell into my lap?
So there's no like addictive personality, that there are these traits that you have that make you doomed to be addicted to multiple things. But there are people that never learn coping skills or emotional maturity and they get trapped into this cycle of drinking or eating or using or having a lot of sex or over-exercising or binging and purging. And they get trapped into these addictive cycles because they don't know how to cope or process emotions. So that's kind of more how I see it than like a personality or a type of person. Because the people who learn coping skills from their parents are lucky, and they could have been genetically predisposed to developing addiction, but because they learned emotional maturity from their parents growing up, they were protected. I think that answers your question.
Yeah, 100% it does. And that's actually super interesting, because it kind of, it flips it. It's kind of like, it's not that we have do or don't have a specific addictive personality or tendencies or something like that. It's that we are looking for that maybe stability or that answer, or that, again, that coping somehow with all of the perils that life will inevitably throw at us. And when we don't have that, again, instant gratification leads us to the low hanging fruit. And
exactly. Yeah. And some things feel better for people than, like, alcohol feels way better for me than it does for my husband. I'm more likely to go to alcohol. He's more likely to go to something else. But there have been some really cool studies on trauma. There was one specifically about morphine. And they had two groups of people, like healthy controls who had no childhood trauma, and then people who did have childhood trauma but were not addicted to anything. And they gave both groups morphine. And the group, the healthy control group with no trauma, they reported feeling nauseous and like dizzy and like gross, and they didn't enjoy the experience. They didn't feel good. The group with the childhood trauma felt euphoric and they felt amazing on the same dose of morphine. So your life experiences determine how your brain works and how things feel for you. So this, you could take the same person and have one with childhood trauma, and, you know, in another version of the world, they didn't have the childhood trauma, and they could have a whole different adult life. They could struggle with addiction in one version and not in another. This is like epigenetics. So how your childhood and like chronic stress or whatever changed the way that your genes are expressed. And there's been studies on women that experienced sexual abuse in their childhood, and they found that there were some changes in gene expression in their brain that regulated their neurotransmitters and their mood. And those women were way more likely to develop antisocial alcoholism than women who had the same genetics, the same gene, but no sexual trauma. So just the sexual trauma had changed how their brain works in a way that made them very vulnerable to alcohol and like how it affected them.
Yeah, that's super interesting and very powerful. And just interesting to think about. I mean, I've read about these type of things as well. A book that I recommend to any listeners who want to learn more about this type of stuff, where I first was introduced to these concepts, was is The Body Keeps the Score, which talks a lot about these type of like how traumas and things like that can manifest physically in ways that frankly might not seem possible, but this stuff is real. And as we learn more about this stuff, we see how complicated and complex and interesting that the body is and that it knows. And I think that's such a important point to bring up, because as you said in the beginning, you know, people who want to get sober, like there's no stigma. I'm not a loser, this, that, and the other thing, which I agree with, but there's also people who are addicted are not broken. Why, you know, this is not, there's nothing wrong with you. There's a myriad of circumstances and effects and things that are pushing us and nudging us and pulling us and things that are within and without our control. Now, again, I do caveat that with saying that sometimes you get the shit end of the stick in life, and what you do with that is now, it does become your responsibility. I'm not using these as excuses, but it is to say that sometimes it sucks. You know, sometimes you're like, people are like, why me? Am I broken? No one is broken. It's just sometimes things don't work out in the way that they could have. And again, this is why I'm big on the shoulds, right? A lot of people have this thing of the way things are should be, or the way things are supposed to be. And I think that to me is a hard stop. Everyone is already setting themselves up for failure once they have that, right? Once you talk about the way things should be, the way things are supposed to be, it's not fair. My cousin can have one drink and she's fine, but as soon as I have one, I have to finish the bottle. It's not fair. Larry can eat 3 Dunkin' Donuts donuts and, you know, he doesn't gain a pound, but when I have it, I have to finish the whole box and I look like a blimp the next day. It's not fair because it's that, but we have to deal with the life that we have and we have to deal with the realities of where we are and our bodies and our brains. So it's just to, you know, I always say, like, you just have to respect where you are in life. It may not be fair and it's not right. And it's cool to educate yourself on these things, because again, it can feel good to know, like, oh, like, I'm not crazy. Like, this is harder for me than everyone else. Right. I always say, people will tell me things like, oh, it just feels like it's so much harder for me. Like, it feels like I have to do so much more work to get so much less result. I'm like, it doesn't feel like that. It literally is that you have to do more work and you get less result. That it's just, you got the shit end of the genetic lottery in that regard. So, you know, with people like that, do you have any words of advice for people who are struggling in that way of and kind of feeling like, this is so much harder than it's supposed to be? This is so much harder for me than it is for everyone else. Why am I like this?
Yeah. Pitying yourself isn't going to change your circumstances, or complaining that other people have it better, or blaming other people for why you don't have it so easy. It's not going to improve your circumstances. And a big part of sobriety for me is acceptance. I just can't freaking drink. I just can't, you know? I also can't really eat Nutella, which is a shame because it's amazing. But if I even have that in my house, you know, it's going to be gone in an instant. So there are just some things you have to accept. Like, accept maybe you suck at math. That's just a fact. Like, you suck at math. Okay. Are you going to feel bad about it for your whole life? No, you're going to move on and find what you're good at. So I think accepting the reality of our situation allows us to live with it and focus on other things. But yeah, this is all about victim mentality and taking ownership for your life. And maybe it is harder for you, but what do you want us to do? Like, you just got to work with what you got.
Yeah, exactly. And I struggle with this a lot because I deal with, you know, people with addiction or people with severe anxiety or depression. And I'm like, I get that. It's real. And I empathize and I get it. But it's like, but what can we do now? That's always my thing as a coach. How can we build forward? So that's always something that I'm looking at. And you actually brought up something with the whole Nutella thing that I actually wanted to ask. It was actually the first question I wrote down, but I kind of skimmed over it. But when it comes to alcohol use and possible alcohol abuse, how important or how much effect does environment have?
Huge. So with food, for example, you cannot buy your trigger foods. And if they're not in your house, you're not going to eat them all. It's not that simple, obviously. But with alcohol, it depends where you live, who your friends are, what you do for work. Like, there's alcohol in the kitchen where I work. Biotech scientists just love to drink, and there's a lot of parties, and I know when they've restocked the alcohol. It's just my special sixth sense. I've honed in on the alcohol. But if your partner likes to drink, that also makes a big difference. I read a study that was really cool, and it's not about assigning blame or anything or making excuses, but if you are married to someone who grew up with parents that drank a lot, it's more likely that you will have a problem. And that's because they grew up kind of learning that that was normal. They grew up learning to take care of people that were hungover. They grew up making excuses for people that were hungover and broke their promises. So they don't think it's abnormal when you're doing it all the time. So they can unknowingly enable you. So that increases your chances. Like, my brother, his fiance doesn't like alcohol. I mean, I can't understand why, but she doesn't like alcohol. So what is he going to do? Start partying by himself alone, like next to her when she's not drinking? Probably not.
Yeah. I think that that's one that's super interesting, that and I completely make sense, right? 100%. I completely get that. And I think it's important to note when I talk about environment, because again, it's like you say same thing with food, right? That's why I bring this up a lot. It's like, if you don't want to eat it, don't bring it in the house. But when I talk about environment, it's not just what's in your kitchen cupboards. Environment is exactly like you said, it's where you work, but it's also your coworkers. It's also social media is your environment, right? What type of stuff are you looking at? Are you looking at, Facebook like decides what videos I like now and just like sends me like the algorithm. And it's decided that I like this guy who just basically tastes alcohol. People give him like mixed drink things and he makes them and drinks them. And like, this guy's a million followers, but it's like, I don't know how they decided that I like this. I hate watch it, but it's just this thing of like, that is part of my environment. If I'm not careful subconsciously, that's the things that I'm putting around myself. And, you know, I just always like to say when I'm talking about environment, it's not specifically the things, the actual structures around you. It's the people around you. It's your job. It's the route you take to work. It's everything. And it can either work for you or it can work against you. Again, anyone listening, another book that I really love is called Willpower Doesn't Work by Dr. Benjamin Hardy. And he basically, if you hear the name of the book, it about sums it up, but like it talks a lot about in the environment and stuff like that. So that was super interesting to me. And second to last question I want to ask you on a little bit of a lighter note. This is more for my own personal thing as I have you here and you're so smart. What is happening in our body during a hangover? And are there any legitimate ways to get around them preemptively or to cure them when I'm already in it or when someone, quote unquote, is already in it? Maybe not me or someone else.
Good question. So alcohol is toxic. It's not something that we should be consuming in large quantities. The only reason that we can consume it is because of evolution. Because when food was scarce, we had to be able to eat rotting fruit so we didn't die. And rotting fruit contains a small amount of alcohol. So survival of the fittest, the animals that developed the ability to process alcohol could eat the rotting fruit and not get drunk or sick. And the animals that couldn't process the alcohol would get drunk or feel very sick. And then they would get their territory invaded and, you know, stuff like that, or they would die. So you're not supposed to drink a ton of it. And when you do, it makes you feel sick because it's toxic. So alcohol is broken down into something that's even more toxic than alcohol, something called acetaldehyde. And that's the thing that's like causing cancer and like destroying your liver and all that stuff. But alcohol does a bunch of things to the body. It dehydrates you. It makes you like alcohol pees are no joke. Alcohol pees are serious business. So you get really dehydrated, which then makes you feel dizzy, super thirsty at 3 a.m. when you wake up with a desert mouth, headache the next day. Alcohol irritates your digestion. It causes like increased acid production. It just irritates the whole thing, which can cause the extreme nausea. That's something I got all the time. It was the worst. And then, you know, the other gastrointestinal stuff that people can get, like vomiting, because you're dehydrated and messed up, your electrolytes are messed up, which can cause, you know, weakness, headaches, heart palpitations, blood sugar is affected. Your blood vessels get dilated, which then makes you have a headache. Like there's so much going on in how it affects our body because it's such a small molecule. It can like just get all over the place. But to cure it, no, don't drink so much next time. So you have to let your body process it. Like you feel like crap because there's a lot of crap circulating in your body. And you just have to give it time to get out of there. Burgers and mozzarella sticks do help a little bit. They help you feel better about, you know, maybe you feel a little embarrassed about all the alcohol you drank or something bad that you said to someone. So a nice comforting cheeseburger has helped me in the past. Pedialyte doesn't help. I've tried that one. That Gatorade doesn't help. Once you're like really dying of a hangover and you're like vicious state, you just have to endure it.
So I'm getting from this that alcohol is bad for us. This is the gist of that conversation. Yeah. And that I for some reason I have the same thing when I'm hungover, all I want is greasy fried food, but I guess I'm, as it's like you said, I'm looking for instant gratification elsewhere. It's just, I want something to make me feel better because I feel like such trash. So, and you know, that's that's about par for the course, I think. So yes, just, I guess drinking less in general is probably the most ideal scenario. We'll see how.
Or that... deciding it's worth it.
Right.
You know, people, not me, but people that can weigh pros and cons, they make a decision and they think, like my husband, for example, he's always my example. Like if we go to a wedding, he's like, yeah, I want to party. I know I'm going to feel terrible. I'm going to have the worst sleep ever, but it's worth it to me.
Right.
And then he parties.
Right. And, you know, I like that too. I appreciate you saying that because that is what we were just talking about. That is being proactive rather than being reactive. That is being in the driver's seat of life. That is, yes, I'm weighing the pros and cons. I'm looking at the consequences and I'm choosing as an adult to accept that. And I think if that's a place to be, I mean, I still probably isn't healthy in the clinical sense, but in the healthiest way, that's the healthiest way that you could possibly do it, I think. So I think that's really cool that you brought that up. I appreciate that. And, you know, the last question that I want to ask before I let you go, and this is a question that I ask all my guests, is if you have one action step to leave listeners with that they can take right now today, as soon as they take their headphones off from listening to this podcast, to start living a healthier, happier life, what would it be?
So I would say, you know yourself pretty well. And you know where your flaws are, and you know kind of the things that you're doing that aren't good for you. If it's alcohol specifically, I would say just expose yourself to the sober community, go look at sober content and have an open mind. But if it's anything else, I would say just work on coping strategies, learning how to cope in a mature way and not blow up your life or not self-sabotage, and learning how to actually feel uncomfortable and know that, like, you're not going to die as a result of feeling overwhelmed for 20 minutes is huge. That's changed everything for me. And that's the reason that I don't drink or, you know, eat 1,000 pounds of Nutella a week or a bunch of pizza, is because I know sometimes life is uncomfortable, but it's not going to be that way forever. And I allow myself to get to the other side. But when we do things to try to make it go away, we never move to the other side of it because we never go through it. So I'd say work on your coping skills with a therapist, read some books, listen to podcasts like this one. A lot of great ways to do it.
I love that. That's, I mean, so powerful. Mic drop moment right there. I really appreciate that. All right. And, you know, last thing, I'm sure that people listening are going to want to connect with you and, you know, hear more about what you're doing. So where can people find you?
So if you search Sober Powered, you will find me all over the place. That's my podcast, my Instagram, YouTube, website. And I also have a Facebook group. So if you're sober curious or in any way, feel free to hang out. It's actually a drama-free group, so it's pretty great.
Awesome. I love that. And I'll link to all of that stuff in the show notes. Thank you so much for being here, Jill. It was a really, really awesome time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, that's it for today. I hope you got a ton of value out of this episode and enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed making it. If you did and you want to show support, you can screenshot this and upload it to Instagram and tag me at Paul Levitin. You can share this episode with a friend or family member to spread the love and spread the knowledge. Or you can leave the show an honest rating and review on Apple, iTunes, or now Spotify as well. If you've made it this far, I sincerely thank you for being here and being along on this journey with me. Until next week, stay happy, stay healthy, my friend.